Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Shrimpcast for October 21st, 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hello.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott from KUT News and the Tribune.
Hi there.
Today we're talking about the first week of early voting, how these first few days have gone so far, the Perry White interviews that the Tribune, KUT, and KLRU hosted last Friday, third-party candidates and their debate with Bill White, and finally the youth vote. I'll start with early voting numbers since I'm looking at them this week. So far, what we know of the first day of early voting is that it is up generally. In the top 15 counties, it's up more than 100%. In some suburban counties, it's up as much, as high as 437% from 2006 in places like Fort Bend County. Harris County is also up more than 200%. Montgomery and Williamson, and I'm watching these counties in particular, not only because they are those heavily suburban areas, right, but also because Bill White is expected to do fairly well in Harris, or at least have a base of support there. Montgomery and Williamson County, they're up more than 150%. So,
well, Fort Bend County being at 400 and something percent over the 06 election, that can't exactly be good news for the Democrats, can it?
Well, you know, Obama won in Fort Bend County, or came very, very close. Fort Bend County.
Obama won in Fort Bend County?
He came very, very close, 20,000 votes.
Yeah.
That county's turning some. He did, I don't think he won, but he came very close.
Yeah. There's some African-American boxes there, right?
It wasn't prohibitively Republican. So the question is whether 2008
is not bad news.
2008 was an outlier election and whether they revert to how they were voting
in
2006.
Doesn't it just feel to you like Fort Bend County in a year like this is more inclined to not vote Democratic?
You would think.
Well, I would, you know, though, it'll be interesting to see how that follows and what the turnout is then on Election Day. The enthused voter votes early. In Austin in 2008, you had record numbers of people coming out to vote in the presidential election early and early voting. And based on, usually it's 50-50 in Austin, 50% vote early voting and 50% vote on Election Day. So you had these record numbers on early voting. When it was all said and done, two-thirds of the vote actually came out on early voting day, and only one-third showed up on Election Day. So people were expecting maybe 80% turnout in Travis County because everyone was all excited about President Obama, and it didn't materialize because they were so excited that they came out early, and then there wasn't anybody left to vote.
Well, you would think this would be the kind of year where the motivation to turn out would be pretty high.
So, and Fort Bend County may have,
at least on one side,
more and more and more numbers like this every day, or they may get a lot of numbers like this early on because everyone who wants to vote is extremely excited about voting, and then we'll see what happens on Election Day.
Another pair of numbers I just got in reporting this story, I just got off the phone with Mike Basilis, Governor Perry's pollster, and he said his latest enthusiasm gap measure, so essentially he gets the percentage of folks in either party that say they are a 10 in terms of excitement about the election. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 10. So there's 43% of the Democrats he polled said they were a 10. 58% of the Republicans polled said they were a 10.
15% enthusiasm gap.
As measured by Governor Perry's pollster.
Governor Perry's pollster.
So if that's the case.
Ross, does this sound right to you? I mean, is this...
Yeah, anger is a better motivator than joy.
You've said this for weeks.
The people that are angry are the ones that are mad at Washington, mad at Obama. They're not really particularly focused on state issues, and to the extent that they are focused on state issues, they're sort of national issues. Immigration is the one that rises to the top of our polls, and they regard it as the biggest state problem and something that the federal government has failed to do. They say, federal government, we don't like you. Federal government's all Democrats. Democrats, we don't like you. Bang.
Montgomery County, you said, and Williamson County. So Montgomery is more of a Republican county?
Right, right.
Williamson is one of those swing counties
It's a Republican county. It's got a swing district in it. You know, the Deanna Maldonado, Larry Gonzalez race up there is a very close race. But the other race in that county is the Schwertner seat now.
This is the successor to Gaddis.
And that's a very Republican seat. So the county as a whole tends to vote Republican.
So the fact that early vote is up in Williamson is probably a little bit better for Republicans. And on the Harris thing, you would think that it would be better for Democrats, except all the polling that we've seen has Governor Perry and Bill White reasonably close in Harris County, right?
Right.
55-45 or 60-40.
Right. So let me back up one thing just to get it correct. In 2008, McCain got 103,000 votes in Fort Bend County. Obama got 98,000. It's a 5,000 vote margin out of about 200,000 votes. That's a tight county.
I have to tell you, as much as I thought I understood everything about the 08 race, I wouldn't have predicted that it would have been that close in Fort Bend.
Right. That was one of the There was, as Elise said, there was a big African American turnout there. And,
well, maybe, but of course, you know, again, we don't know what that 400+% increase represents.
Well, and turnout
that's
patterns,
the big caveat here, because right. We don't know the partisan makeup of the folks who are voting early. We know that the folks who vote early are most enthusiastic, but most enthusiastic for whom? I mean, You'd have to really go through the voter rolls and compare those voters to their partisan voting history.
And there are people doing that in both parties. I mean, you know, that's one of the things you do in a turnout race is you look at the first couple of days. There's this great story in Fort Worth from 2 years ago. State Senator Kim Brimer lost his election. He won mail-in balloting. He won on Election Day. He lost in in-person early voting.
So the Wendy Davis votes came out early.
Right. And the enthusiasm of those votes was, you know, that you could, if you could have looked at the tallies on the first 3 days of early voting, you see this flood of voters, they're all voting for the Democrat. You would have known then that Kim Brimer was losing that election. So one of the things that people are watching in a thing like this is early voters tend to go, bang, first 3 days, and then there's a bump at the end, last couple of days. So they'll look at these things and kind of compare them to voter rolls and say, well, our guys are turning out, our guys aren't turning out, and act accordingly.
Evan, let's revisit what happened last Friday, our one-hour interviews with White and Perry.
Well, you know, they were fascinating. I think that, you know, the ideal here was that they would both be incredibly, you know, willing to get into the weeds on policy, stay away from some of this name-calling stuff, and finally talk about policy and substance. And I think that by and large we did. You know, we were not above or below, depending upon your perspective, getting into some of the name-calling stuff. But mostly we talked about substance. And I was really interested in how Governor Perry reacted on a couple of things that we've, you know, put video up almost immediately on things that were not predicted to be flashpoints, abstinence. I guess you could have figured on sanctuary city versus sanctuary state. That wouldn't be that surprising that the governor would react as he did. But, you know, on the budget, he was pretty resolute in his no taxes, going to cut spending, you know. I think that they really showed themselves to be the people they are.
Right. I think you could get a really, really good sense of who these guys were.
Serious contrast between the two.
Right.
And, you know, Mayor White was, I thought, a little slow to get started. I thought he finished strong. The stuff on energy at the end, I thought it was in particular a good
moment. He really
moment
perks up when you mention energy.
Like, he does.
You know, we've gone into his wheelhouse now.
If he only had had, like, you know, energy cough drops for the entire interview, maybe his poor guy was coughing the whole time, and I think it was a little distracting probably for everybody to watch him. I figured I was about two steps away from having to give him the Heimlich. Mm-hmm. But I thought that he...
That would have been great television.
Hey, you know what? It wouldn't have been great politics, but it would have been awesome TV. I thought he did fine, though. The problem for White, though, in that case is he needed Perry to fall off the stage and bang his head. He needed some kind of a precipitating event that would change the flavor and the texture and the dynamic of the race. And I think that as much as Governor Perry and I got into it on some stuff, and as much as Mayor White may have been in there swinging during our hour, I'm not sure that Friday really changed anything.
I think you can get a really good sense of these two candidates watching, if you want to take the 2 hours and watch these two videotapes. Neither one of them really stepped out of character. Neither one of them made the kind of mistake that made you think differently of them if you knew a little bit about them going in. You know, there wasn't something, oh, that's new, or oh my gosh, he did that, or, you know, sort of what you expected.
Bill White wasn't flamenco dancing or anything like that.
So, you know, we talked a lot about the person who's behind wants the debate for that possible misstep by their opponent. It seems, though, that, I mean, these two interviews, like Ross was saying, you really did get a good sense of who the candidates were, what they stood for. You didn't have a back and forth moment, you know, between the two candidates like you would in a debate. But I told somebody afterwards, I said, you know, Evan Smith has just killed the idea of a governor ever having a debate in Texas. Because I think it was very, in terms of engaging people in the process and providing information to make an informed decision, you had two very thorough hours that didn't get into name calling, that didn't get into, well, my opponent, blah, blah, as much. I mean, White obviously tried some. I just thought it was a lot of really good information, and you get a sense of who the people are without name calling and without it being an hour long attack ad.
I would have liked them side by side.
I like this format. And, you know, you guys know this, I'm not a big fan of debates. I think they're kind of kabuki theater. And I also think if you have a debate, particularly if you have more than two candidates, the amount of time that they are actually exposed to voters is really small. I mean, if you go back and watch the Carol Strayhorn, Kinky Friedman, Chris Bell, Rick Perry thing, each of them answered maybe four questions. I mean, they got nowhere with that debate.
But look at the New York this week. Look at the gubernatorial debate with Andrew Cuomo, Palladino, and some guy in a Viking hat.
Right.
And then you had the guy singing the Rent is Too Damn High rap song.
Well, that's a particular kind of show, and this is a particular kind of show. But
this was not that.
For these guys, I mean, one of the things that was kind of interesting, and I think this happened to Perry a little bit. It's like, if you don't want a debate, in a debate you're going to be exposed for 20 minutes in your hour. In this thing like this, you're going to be exposed for 60 minutes, and better be your A game. And Perry was mostly his A game. He had a couple of C moments.
Well, I will tell you that on some of the stuff that we here at the Tribune have been particularly interested in, on the schedule stuff,
open government issues, right? Email retention.
Mm-hmm. I don't think the governor, I'll say it, did particularly well.
He didn't seem as if he was prepared for that. He seemed
to assert rather than answer.
Right.
It's okay because I say it is. And his fallback in a lot of the stuff was, if the legislature makes me, I'll do it.
Right. He became very passive. I mean, for a guy who's been running the executive branch and, I'm going to run the state and I'll take responsibility for all the jobs and yada, yada, yada. It was a very, I'll just sit here and wait for what the legislature does.
I just, on the calendar stuff, I don't think he gave a very compelling or necessarily factual answer as to what, because unless the reporting on the accidental release of the calendar is totally wrong, and what we got was actually his personal schedule, it really didn't seem to be what he said in the interview. It was
right. That political schedule that was released on accident did not have 7:30 a.m. run 3 miles. 6:30 p.m. take Bella out for a walk.
8:15. Upbraid Anita for not having Cinnamon Toast Crunch in the closet. There didn't seem to be that sort of stuff.
People schedule that stuff, huh?
If you're the governor, you're a busy guy. You got to put that on the calendar.
Wait, it's time to talk about cereal.
Really, the point though was that, if this governor is as committed to transparency as he says he is, and he brought it up in the first minute when we talked about why are you not debating and why are you hawking Bill White about his taxes and, da, 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 da. He said, I'm all for transparency. Well, governor, if you're for transparency, then be for transparency. Didn't think his answer was particularly good on that. On the budget stuff, the guy is programmed.
Well, he knows the budget.
He was on the
House Appropriations Committee.
Yeah.
A lot of the people that everybody now calls his cronies were also on the House Appropriations Committee. He knows that stuff.
I thought it was funny that he said, I trust Ogden more than Pitts. I mean, he didn't use those words exactly, mm-hmm. but he
that's what
did.
He meant. Right.
But then with White, well, Mayor, you didn't release your tax returns. You could be debating the governor in theory if you released them. What's in them? Is Judge Crater in them? What's in them that you don't want to... I didn't really think his answer was particularly good on that. I still don't know what's in them.
No. And you still don't know why he didn't let them loose. And the question with White isn't, why did you or didn't you let your tax returns loose? It is, why did you let all of your tax returns except for these loose? Why did you stop it? If you're open, you're open. If you're closed, you're closed. And you can argue that.
He may think this is a set the bar, move the bar thing. That the minute that he released them, the Perry campaign would be saying, well, now we want this. We want your eighth grade history grade.
Right.
But still, so on that stuff, I kind of thought that they were not necessarily their best selves. But on a lot of the substantive stuff,
you can tell a little bit from these kinds of questions from both campaigns that where the holes in their research are. So the Perry campaign clearly would like to, we have a hole in our research. We'd like you to send your tax returns so we can fill this. And the White campaign is, we have a hole in our research. Could you send your schedules over? It's kind of an interesting thing,
but
where they wanted to hit each other.
And then the preparation that they did for these interviews, I thought was very revealing. You could tell where they had prepared and where they hadn't. I mean, I'm certain that in all the preparation that the governor did for this interview, which I'm not assuming was an enormous amount, but was something, the word abstinence clearly did not come up.
Well, and the campaigns wanted questions from the public, from social media, through Facebook and all these. And, the questions that were sort of like, were all those kinds of questions.
They should have seen the ones we didn't ask.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, the tinfoil hat questions. But anyway,
let's switch over to the debate.
Speaking of tinfoil hats.
Right. So-called debate that happened this week.
The man who wasn't there.
Right.
Rick Perry was the one guy in the governor's race who didn't show up. We did get Bill White, who didn't make much news. Come back to that in a second. We got Kathy Glass, and our first really extended exposure to Kathy Glass, the Libertarian candidate in this thing, who got off some good lines but didn't really make many points. It was sort of interesting. She was sort of Ben, you were sitting there. I mean, she had some studied lines. She had some lines ready to go. Some of them were actually pretty funny, but
She had some studied lines, and in between the two or three sentence answers that she had memorized, there was a little bit of stumbling to figure out the best transition to get to those lines.
Right. I thought her newsiest point was when they asked about dropouts, and she said,
"Oh, and she said just let them go."
Yeah, she said students of a certain age ought to be able to quit. It's a product that is so bad you can't give it away. She said at public schools. So that was kind of interesting.
Well, way to stick to her guns. I mean, that's a very libertarian point of view.
She said she would cut the state budget in half. She said, it was actually pretty interesting. And then Deb Shafto is a retired teacher who is running in the Green Party and was an interesting combination of, you know, she was a teacher of a certain era, you know, and it happens to be the era when I was in elementary school, and it was sort of a flashback.
The 1800s.
Yeah, were you worried you had not brought your homework?
We lived in black and white, and now we live in color.
You opened yourself up to
this. I walked right in.
Understand.
I did.
Was that Sonny? Pre or post Civil War?
So there was that, and then there was this sort of flip where you got to environmental questions, and she was very much a child of the moment. I mean, sort of, you know, the environmental questions and things like that. Peace, love, and togetherness. It was sort of a funny mix. But it was interesting to see these candidates.
Well, I will say, you know, there were several little Twitter messages before the debate began making jokes of, the moon is in the 7th house and all this. But I didn't think she actually got really out there until maybe her closing speech, where she talked about, you know, essentially I got out of her closing speech, you know, love is more important than money.
Right.
Which is not a bad idea. I'm just saying it's interesting to hear in a debate.
The question is whether someone like Bill White sharing the stage with these guys, I know it's democracy in action and it's good, and I'm glad that Mrs. Glass and Mrs. Shafto had the opportunity to be up there, but is White elevated by this or diminished?
Well, go ahead.
I'll say the last paragraph of my story was White's hoping that this is helping. Either he gets an hour on TV to make another case, and maybe he's elevated Glass to steal some percentage points.
Well, honestly, the latter I get. The former, Bill White has not lacked for time on television. I mean, I think he's guest starring on House tonight. I mean, the fact is, the guy is on television, well, and every time you turn it on.
This is at least his second debate with those other candidates, right?
He told Bill Stotesbury over at KLRU last night that I got to pitch a tent over here. I'm over here all the time. And I think that's exactly.
Yeah, the Perry campaign will send that a note. Liberal lawyer Bill White pitches a tent. They'll make it out to be dirty, actually.
Where I stuck that asterisk a minute ago is White didn't take the opportunity to do anything with this. He has an afternoon press conference before this thing where he goes after Perry on all this teacher retirement system stuff and, you know, whether Perry appointees, you know, made decisions in that agency to benefit Perry friends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he's got a fresh thing to talk about, and he only mentioned it once, and he didn't mention it with any particular force. He didn't use this opportunity when he was in a position to overshadow a Libertarian and a Green candidate and make news. He didn't take the opportunity.
I was marking down in my notes each time he did mention it, thinking that by the end of the day it would be like, you know, Farouk Shami and Jobs,
right?
You know, and I was gonna mention that number at the end of my story, and he mentioned TRS once, and he mentioned cronyism through Enterprise Fund or Emerging Technology Fund once, and that was it. So I stopped keeping count.
Could he have been harder on Perry in general then? Is that what you're saying? Not only did he miss an opportunity with TRS, did he miss other opportunities to kind of pivot and...
Yeah. People are voting now. He has to close this sale, and he's not closing the sale. He's not, you know, you take this opportunity and you give people a clear reason to make a decision now. It's that you're in the car lot, you know? What can I do to sell you a car today? You've got to close the sale.
Glass was more attacking on Perry than he was.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
So come back to this question of helping the other candidates take votes away from Perry. Do you think, you both watched this debate last night, did you think that either Glass or Shafto were helped last night by this and are in a position to take votes away from the governor?
I don't think they were particularly hurt. Bud Kennedy had a great column this morning in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram where he said probably the best thing that happened for White here was that nobody was watching the debate. So you kind of extend that to the idea, and this thing just didn't get played on much TV station and many TV stations, and it's up against a playoff game.
And even a number of the newspapers that were co-sponsors of this debate, I understand from Jason Embry's column this morning, didn't even play it on page one.
Right, right.
Dum-dum.
And I think that was a good news decision. I think, you know, you can't play it out there just because you're sponsoring it. You got to have some content. And the content was interesting. I'm glad I went. I thought it was fascinating. I don't know that it advanced anybody's cause.
I just wonder, you know, I was sitting there wondering, what would this race be like if we had Deborah Medina, Libertarian candidate, as opposed to Kathy Glass?
Mm-hmm. What if Josh Hamilton were the Libertarian candidate?
Well,
if Josh, he'd hit a homer, but not when they needed it.
Yeah, that's what you say. Look, it looked to me like they needed it every time he hit one.
Before the wheels fall off, Ben.
Too late.
Wait, if it's my topic, right. Then we're going right
ben,
into
we're
the
going
ditch.
Over to your topic and the youth vote. Here we are in the thick of early voting. What does it look like?
Well, you know, I just did a little story earlier in the week talking to some of the grassroots organizations that, you know, every 2 years try to get out the youth vote. And really the thing that was most interesting, I thought, this year was the idea that those grassroots groups are working just as hard as 2008 when, you know, we saw a swell, or at least at the very least, it certainly felt like a swell of youth vote for the presidential election. So the grassroots groups are working just as hard. The parties aren't necessarily working quite as hard to make those connections with the grassroots group. I talked to the guy, one of the members of the Young Republicans, one of the board members of the Young Republicans there at University of Texas Austin, and he said that the Perry campaign's not reaching out. Now, he said, I don't necessarily fault them. He said, you know, the campaigns have a certain amount of time and money to spend, and they go after likely voters. He said, so I blame my generation. If we were likely voters...
Theory is that young voters are inherently unlikely.
That's what he was saying. He said, you know...
Blame the history. They go where the votes are, right?
He said, so if we were more likely to vote, the Perry campaign would be reaching out to us more. He said, we got reached more... There was more effort made by the campaigns to talk to us in 2008 than now.
So the white campaign doing a rally to restore competence, as they called it on Tuesday at UT Austin, is an effort on their part to, you know, if the Perry campaign is going to leave votes on the table, we're not.
Yeah, I mean, it's University of Texas, so he's going to find more support here than Perry does.
And what the heck, he was on campus anyway because he had to go
right,
over and do this debate.
Had to go over and do
right.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week's podcast. I want to send a special shout out to our listener, Larissa Lindsay, who told me in Houston yesterday that she and her husband listen to the Tribcast every Sunday night together.
Oh, my God.
Larissa is doomed.
True story.
Thank you. Exactly. Not as boring as Boardwalk Empire, apparently.
On behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, and our producer, Todd, I'm Elise. Thanks for listening.